Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Mem Bet Amud Aleph, about seven lines down. It's a case. Hahu damar lechavrei. This individual says to his friend, "Havli me'azuzei demasikne b'cho. Please pay me back the 100 zuz that you owe me." Hashtara, and here's the shtar. Here's the shtar that you owe me the money. Amar lei praticha. The loveh, the supposed borrower, says, "I repaid you the money." This is a different loan. Right, maybe you paid back. Maybe there was some sort of repayment over here. But this shtar is evidence to a different loan. Amrav Nachman, itrish Torah. Nachman believes that the shtar over here has been compromised, and it cannot function like a regular shtar. On the other hand, Rav Papa Amar, lo itrish Torah. Papa says there's no problem with the shtar. The shtar is evidence, and if the shtar is evidence, then he can collect based on this shtar. So again, so we said back on Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, when it came to a shtar, the shtar has the strongest power here. If someone shows up with a shtar, and he says, "Look, I'm ready to collect on my shtar," your claim against the shtar, or the debtor's, or the defendant's claim against the shtar, really doesn't stand or doesn't hold water. Because the shtar is the ultimate form of evidence that he can bring to the case. And the only there, we said that if he wants to ask him to take a shvua, that it was not parah, that it wasn't paid already, that he can do. But that's all takanas chachamim, that we allow him to do such a thing. But over here already, we're starting to see a break in the shtar, because over here, he claims that he repaid him. And the malve agrees that there was some form of repayment over here. So since there was some of repayment, he says, Sitrainin, who is a different loan, right, then we already know that there are some questions as to the, you know, veracity of the shtar, whether the shtar really applies over here. So therefore, the Rav Nachman at least holds the itrish shtar. Now, what does it mean, itrish Torah? So that the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rabbeinu Tam believe that itrish Torah means that since the shtar has weakened form, we force the malveh, we force the lender to take a shvuah in order to receive the monies. The shtar is a weakened shtar, but together the shtar with a shvuah can become the equivalent to what a shtar would have been. That's where the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rabbeinu Chananel learn. On the other hand, Tosfot disagrees. And Tosafot says, no, itrish Torah means that the shtar is no longer a item that you can use for collection. And that means it's an uncollectible item. So what do we do with the shtar? This is, we have in other places, that shtaria lo mikri karin enle, we don't rip it up because we're afraid that maybe one day we'll find out that it was a valid shtar. On the other hand, lo mikbag gavin enle, we don't collect with this shtar. So the shtar has, we basically leave the shtar. The shtar is still there, but we won't allow you to collect on it. A shvua won't help you. The shtar is like in a limbo state, and it remains in that limbo state. So it's not valid for collection, but we also don't rip it up because we might find evidence to the fact that it was a good shtar. So that's a question about what itrish shtar means over here. But this weakened shtar is either can only be collected with a shvua, or the other possibility is that it can be it can't be collected with at all. So that's what itrish shtar. But here we have machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Papa as to whether itrish shtar in this case. So Gemara says, Ula Rav Papa, who says over here the shtar is valid still, Maishna Mahahu, how's this different than the other case? He says, please give me the 100 zuz that you owe me. Vahashtara, and here's the shtar. Amalei, Lava Torei Yehavetli, didn't you lend me the money in order to go into business together? We're going to business together, 50-50, and I was going to go buy Shvarim, I was going to go buy oxen. Ve'otit, and then you came, Vityatvit Amaschato. You came and you met me in the butcher shuk, and I gave you back your money. I mean that you came after we had finished up, then we shechted the animals and sold the money, you came to that location, you came to the shuk, and I repaid you the money that had to do with this transaction or this business dealings that we were in together. I mean that this was a transaction that involved some sort of business deal that we were in together, and you were repaid whatever was in the business deal, that you got your money back. Bamerlei, he says, Hanu Sitraininhu. He says, this is a different loan. So why are these two cases different? Over here, you know what? Amar Rav Papa, itrish shtara. Rav Papa says, the shtar is no good. So this seems to be almost an identical case. He lends him money. He claims that the money was repaid. And he says, yes, the money was repaid, but this is a different loan. In one case, Rav Papa says, lo itrish shtara. That was the case we saw before. And here he says, itrish shtara. The Gemara wants to know, what's the difference in these two cases? So Hatam, over there, Kevin de Amar, Torei Ahavitli, Umi Torei Shakaut. So over there, it's clear what transaction they're speaking about and what shtar they're speaking about. He says clearly, listen, I bought. The monies that you gave me with were to go into business together. And I repaid you those monies. And you were present in a location where it makes a lot of sense that I was repaying you the money that related to this business deal over here. So it's clear that whatever was documented in this shtar, whatever was relevant in this shtar, that he was addressing, and he's saying that was repaid. And when the malveh comes along and says, Sitraininhu, this is a different loan, He's somewhat acquiescing to the fact that this shtar is not a full-fledged shtar anymore. He's agreeing in some way that there's a problem with the shtar. Whereas in the first case that we mentioned before, all the statements that are being made are generic statements. Oh, you owe me money. I paid the money back. This is another loan. Those are all generic statements. And we have no other circumstantial evidence to indicate that what he's saying is not true, or that the fact that there is another loan outstanding, I mean, there's no way to indicate that the repayment had to do directly with this shtar, or that the repayment involved a loan on a specific transaction, and therefore this can't be another loan, or there's circumstantial evidence to say that it's not a new loan. And since this is all generic statements, we say, okay, maybe he repaid, maybe this is a new loan. There's no reason to question the validity of the shtar, because if he really repaid the loan, he should have taken the shtar back. The borrower should have claimed the shtar. The fact that the lender has a shtar, shtarcha b'yodi maboy, what is the shtar doing in my hand? It must be that you owe me the money. And that's enough of a claim to come here and force the loveh to pay, because the loveh has nothing else or no other evidence to the contrary in that case. So now, my havyalo, what's the din? Rav Papi amar lo yitrish tara. Rav Papi says, the shtar is not a problem. Rav Sheshet b'rei Davidi amar yitrish tara. The shtar is a problem. V'hilchato. This is the halacha. Yitrish tara. That the shtar is problematic. V'hane mile. That's only the pare be'apesade. That's only if he paid him back in front of Eidim. V'lo yidkar le shtara. And he never mentions the shtar. Aval pare ben didei didei, if it repays him in front of, you know, between the lender and the borrower, all the transaction, migo de yachol meimar lo yud varim yoldam, since the malveh himself can say it never happened, yachol nami de meimar sitra ninhu, therefore you can say it's another case, kidab yimei brei de rabo, similar to the case of yimei brei bo, which is in ketubot, which is a similar type of case. So the difference here, the migo that we're discussing over here, is the migo of the malveh. The right of the malveh to say sitra ninhu, to say this is an alternative loan, right, is limited by whether he could have denied the whole situation. In a case where the repayment of the loan was done not in front of Eidim, but between the two of them, then he has two choices. They come to court, and the loveh says, I repaid you. So the malveh has two choices here. He can either say, lo yadu remi malom, never happened. You owe me the money. There's no evidence to the repayment, and I have a shtar. You're going to pay me. Since he didn't take that claim, which would have been a clean claim for him, easy and clean claim for him, since he didn't take that opportunity, and instead said, sitra ninhu, we believe him because of the migo. Since he had an alternative claim which had been easy, and he didn't take that, and he went with the sitra ninhu, over there the shtar remains betokif, the shtar remains in its state, and we say fine. On the other hand, in the case where the repayment was done in front of Eidim, if the repayment is done in front of Eidim, then the malveh can no longer deny the repayment. Since he can no longer deny the repayment, he doesn't have his migo. His migo disappears. So now when he says sitra ninhu, we say itra shtara. The shtar is somewhat compromised. Why is the shtar compromised? Because he agrees that we have Eidim, that there was some sort of form of repayment. Now the loveh doesn't make out, or the loveh is at a loss here a little bit, because the loveh, if you think about it, he didn't mention the shtar. When he repaid in front of the Eidim, he never mentioned a word about the shtar. Why didn't he mention the shtar? He should have at least mentioned the shtar. So the loveh is, right, in a compromised position because he didn't mention the shtar during the repayment. The malveh is in a compromised position because they're Eidim to a repayment, so he doesn't have a migo anymore. So therefore it becomes itra shtara. So in that case, it's itra shtara. So that's the halacha. Halacha again, it's itra shtara. That's as long as we have evidence to the fact that there was some repayment over here, which ruins the migo of the malveh. Okay. Hamud amar li lechavrei, mehemet li kol emat amart li lo perano. He says, you are believed. Meaning that in this case, if you say I didn't pay, I'll have to pay. You're given all trust in this case to say that I didn't pay and I will pay you the money. And this is done in front of Eidim. Azal pare ba'apesade. And then he repays him in front of Eidim. And now, Abai v'Rabba, now they show up in court. And he says in court, you owe me the money. So now, he said, I believe you. Whenever you say you owe me the money, I believe you. But we do have Eidim that there was some form of repayment over here. So Abai v'Rabba damri tavayu ha'hemne. He's out of luck. He believed the lender in this case, and since he gave credence to the statement of the lender, it doesn't matter that they're Eidim of repayment over here. He says whatever the lender says goes. So we have the lender saying he owes the money. He's got to pay it over here. Now Rashi points out over here, this is all done in front of Eidim, and we don't say, what could we say over here? This is a case, we've had these cases other times, which is that pitume mifatme, that sometimes the loveh says some things to convince the lender to lend him the money. Right, the borrower wants to convince the lender to lend him the money. So he says, listen, I'll believe you. Whatever you say, I'll believe you. So do we say he means that literally? Or does he just saying that so he'll have so the lender will actually lend him the money? So you could have had to have him, you know, that's what he was saying. No, we tell you here, no. When he said that he's going to do that, we believe it, and we believe him fully. Even though when he said it in front of Eidim, that means I believe you, and I believe you no matter what. And that means that if he comes in this case where there's a deem of repayment, but if the borrower, if the lender says you didn't repay me, he's got to pay. So Matkla Rapapa says, wait a minute. Now, when he said, I believe you no matter what, that means when it's me versus you. My word against your word trumps. Tvei misade mihemne. He didn't say that he's giving him the power to overcome edim. He says, you have, when it's between you and me, if there's a machlokus or there's a difference in opinion between me and you, your word governs. But he did not say to him that you have the power to overcome other evidentiary claims, meaning that if you have two edim, if you have something else that has tokif and beis din, it doesn't say that it overcomes that. That's not what he said. But how damalei lechavre mehemet li kebei trei? If he says the other mention, you're believed to me like two edim. Kol eman damret lo parana. As long as you say I didn't pay you back, you the lender are believed like two edim that I have not repaid it. Azo pari ba'ape tlata. Now he repays him in front of three individuals. Amar of Papa, kibay trei hemne, kibay tlata lo hemne. So Rav Papa uses the same logic that he used in the previous case, which is, in the previous case, he says, listen, he believed him, the lender, when it was a one against one, but he didn't believe him in the face of Edim. So he says over here the same thing. He says, I believed you like two Edim, I didn't believe you like three Edim. So I brought three Edim, and I paid in front of three Edim. Now, Amar Rav Huna Breda Yeshua, the Rav Papa, you know, with all due respect, these cases are not similar. Why? When do we go after the numbers that we check, 4 against 3, 5 against 2? When does it matter that there is more on one side of the case or the other? That's when we're talking about assessments of value. When we're talking about determining the value of an object, there we say the more the merrier. The more people who give their opinion about the value of the object, the more likely we are to come to the right price. On the other hand, when it comes to edut, that's not the case. Right? So over there, the commandant of Fishe Bikiye Tvei. The more people that testify, the better informed we are. Avalin and edut, when it comes to edut, mea ketrei utrei kemea. Akat edim makes no difference. Akat edim has the same standing whether there are 3 people in the kat, or there are 100 people in the kat, or there are 2 people in the kat edim. So the fact that you have 3 versus 2 should have no bearing on the case over here. You have one kat of edim, is one unit of edim, and 2 edim, and a unit, a kat edim, that's another unit. One unit against one unit. He said, I believe you like a unit of edim. So if he went and repaid in front of another unit of edim, why should the 3 people in the kat edim trump the kat that only has 2 in it? He says, that doesn't make sense. Now, lishna achrina, there was another lishon. How would amalei lechavre mehemet li kebei trei? I believe you like 2 edim. Kolema damat lo prana. As long as you, whatever you say, if I didn't pay you back, I believe you. Azul pari ba'apei tlat, I repaid in front of 3. So amar of papa bebei trei hemne bekebei tlat alo hemne. Same thing that we just spoke before. Matikle ravuna brei devashua trei kemea meyaka trei. Exactly the same sugya. Now, this is the addition in this lishon. Ve'i amar le kebei tlat. On the other hand, if he says to him like 3, and then he repaid him in front of 4. So this is very interesting. So in this Lashon, in the previous Lashon, all he says is, he says, I believe you like 2, I believe you like 3, I believe you like 4. He's just saying, I believe you like a kat edim. So then it becomes irrelevant if he brings another kat. How many people are in the kat edim are irrelevant? You have one kat versus one kat. He said, I believe you like a kat edim. Doesn't matter that he shows up with a kat that has more people in it, right? That doesn't give him any more believability. On the other hand, if in the first place, if he said, I repaid you, I believe you like 3 edim. What does that mean, I believe you like 3? In edut, 3 is not a relevant number. The minimum, if you want to believe someone like edim, you say 2. 2 is an edut. If you already mentioned 3, why would he mention 3 and not 2? 3 instead of 2 comes to suggest or indicate that numbers make a difference here. He's saying, I'm not trusting you just like regular kat edim. I'm trusting you because you have 3. That means if I'm able to bring more people to the party, if I'm able to repay in front of 4, that will trump your 3. And so that's what the Gemara says over here. Since he introduced 3, the number 3, which shouldn't be relevant or is not really relevant by edim, that already means nachid l'deot. He already is indicating that the numbers matter. And since the numbers matter now, if he repaid in front of 4, that will trump the 3. And therefore, if he has 4 edim or 4 people testifying to the fact that he repaid it over here, then he will be okay and he is believed. I mean that the lender will no longer be believed to say that he did not repay in this instance. All right, now the next Gemara we had, this is towards the end of our Mishnah. A person does not take a shvuah on a claim made by a cheresh, shoteh, and katan. So the Gemara is only really going to discuss Katan, but we know from other places in Shas that Cheresh and Shoteh have the same din as a Katan, that they have the same, they're classified in the same grouping. Rashi points out that we know that throughout Shas, when Chazal say Cheresh, they mean Chomakom as Mishm Enu Medaber Ve'enu Shomea. So how does he have a Tana here? How does he have a claim if he's Enu Medaber Enu Shomea? Rashi says Derech Rimiza. He's able to indicate through either sign language, he's indicate through pointing. He's able to indicate what the claim is through Rimiza. That's what Rashi exclaims over here. So now we said you're not allowed to take you don't take a shvuah on any of these claims. Ve'mish bim et a katan. We don't force a katan to take a shvuah. Where it says my time. Why not? So Amar Kra, the pasuk says, "Ki tein ish el rehu kesef oketim lishmor." Person gives over to another individual items to watch, and then the pasuk continues that those pasukim continue. V'nikrav balabayit el Elohim, that the balabayit goes to the Beis Din and takes a shvua. So that's the end of the pasuk, right? The end of that, or not the next pasukim discuss that he takes a shvua. So how do you generate a shvua? You generate a shvua. Ki tein ish el rehu kesef oketim. So that's what the Gemara says. Ve'ein netinat katan klum. That in order to generate the shvua, you need a netina. You need a netina that is of significance. Since you need a netina of significance, a katan cannot generate the transaction that will obligate the shvua. Because you need ki ten ish. Ten ish means that there's a transaction of a person who is over the age of bar mitzvah, and if someone's not over the age of bar mitzvah, they can't generate the netina. If they can't generate the netina, there's no obligation of a shvua. A shvua relates to something that has a netinat ish, that has something that is given by a bar dat, and a bar dat who gives it, he generates or he can cause a shvua to come into place. So that's the failure over here is the netina. The lack of netina is what creates the failure, because then we don't create the shvua. Now, the Gemara says, well, wait, what about the next part of our Mishnah? The Mishnah after that says, Avanishbaim the katan ulekdesh. You do take a shvua to a katan and to hekdesh. Well, the obvious question is, if you can't take a shvua on a tanat taina of a katan, if a katan cannot make a claim to bring you to a shvua, how are you ever taking a shvua towards a katan? What's the case? What's the situation which you can have like that? So that's what the Gemara says. V'ha'amart reisha inishbaim al tanat shoteve katan. Right? Or her shoteve katan. If that's the case, how do you ever have a case where you nishbaim the katan? So Amar Rav, we're going to have a machlokas here between Rav and Shmuel how to solve this problem. So the first solution is given by Rav. Beva betanat aviv, Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakovi. The claim is coming because of his father. His father is the one who generated the transaction. And because of his father, now he's making a claim that you owe me money. And this is according to Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov. Titanya, we have a brisa. Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov omer, pe'amim she'adam nishba'al tanat atzmo. There are times where a person will pay based on his own statements. Ketzad, what's that case? Amar lo, maneh l'avicha biyodi. Your father, right, gave me money. He lent me money. Ve'chal tifras. And I repaid half of that loan. Harizeh nishba. Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov, he's got to take a shvua. You know what he is? He's a modeh b'miktzat. He's a modeh b'miktzat. He's got to take a shvua. V'zeh u'shnish b'al tanat atzmo. And here's an individual who's taking a shvua based on his own statement. Now, as Rashi points out here, that there's no difference between tanat atzmo and tanat katan. The tain of a katan is meaningless. The tain of a katan is zero in the eyes of halacha. So since the tain of a katan is zero, that means if he comes with tanat aviv, which he comes and he claims that you owe money to my father, right? So then the admission of the individual, right? He agrees that he borrowed the money, and then he says, I repaid half of it. The only statement that is relevant over here is the statement of the defendant. The defendant's statement that I borrowed the money and I repaid half is the only thing that matters over here. So you see, or at least Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov believes in this case, that you have to take a shvuah, modeh b'miktzat. So you see here that when it comes to a tanat katan, even though the tanah of the katan is meaningless, nevertheless, since the nitina was generated by the father, and you have an individual who is admitting to the fact that there was a transaction, is being modeh b'miktzat, therefore he has to take a shvua over here. Now the chachamim disagree. Chachamim rim, and elok meshiva beita patur. He's like returning an aveda. I mean that since he's coming on his own volition here, and admitting to the fact that he borrowed the money, right, then who generated it? Pesha Asur, who a Pesha Hitir. I mean, how do we know about this loan? We only know about this loan because, again, the Tanat of a Katan is meaningless. The only reason we know about this loan is because this individual says, I borrowed the money. Now he says, I borrowed the money and I repaid half. Well, the only reason we know he borrowed the money is because he said so. So why wouldn't we believe him that he also repaid half? Any money that he's giving over here is Kamei Shiva Veda. And we know there's a Takana, right? The Gemara in Gittin tells us there was a Takanat Chachamim that when it comes to a Veda, you don't take a Shvuah. Right? We protect the individuals, or meshiva beida. They won't have to take a shavua because that would be mitpnei tikkun olam. So also over here, he's meshiva beida. We're not going to force him into a position of a shavua. That's the position of the chachamim. So Rav's solution to the problem in our Mishnah is, you're right, Tanat Katan is meaningless, and therefore a Tanat of a Katan won't generate anything. But there is a case where you're going to be Nishba la Katan. What's the case when you're Nishba to a Katan? That's in a case where the Katan is, the money is owed to the Katan because of his father, because of a transaction with his father, and that transaction generates a Chiyuv when the person comes and admits to the fact that he borrowed the money and he needs to repay half, that he's obligated to repay half over here. And according, at least according to Rabbi Lezer, according to Chamim, there's Patur. So Rav is claiming Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov is the author of the Mishnah, and that's how we have this case over here. The Gemara says, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov lately meshiva veda patur. Doesn't Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, this is a big basic thing, that mipnei tikkun olam, we don't force someone who's meshiva veda to take a shavua. Why would Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov think otherwise? Why would he disagree with this position of the Chachamim? So my Rav says, b'shetano katan. He says, no, because over here there's a katan making a claim. Gemara says, katan? The Katan can't be relevant to this case, because you said before the Tana of the Katan cannot generate anything over here. So the Katan's Tana is meaningless in this instance. What do you mean the Tano Katan? Tano Katan doesn't mean anything. So Numara says, no, the Olam Gadol. No, here we're talking about someone who's not a Katan, but actually he's a Gadol. So my Karle Katan, so why is he called a Katan? Dilagabe Mile Davua Katanhu. So because when it comes to his father's situation, his father's claims, he's a katan, because he doesn't know. He doesn't have the knowledge or the ability to make the claims like his father did, mean bibari, right, absolute claims, because he wasn't there. He wasn't present at the time. So since he is a katan, when it comes to Mile Aviv, he's called a katan here, but he's really a gadol. If he's really a gadol, then his tana, his claim, has bearing. So since his claim has bearing, you're going to take a shvuah because his claim is meaningful. Where it says, well, ihachi tanat atzmo, then why is the brisa called this tanat atzmo? Right? It's Acherim here. This is Tanat Acherim. This is not him. The Shvua is not being generated here because the individual came and said by himself, his own volition, that he owed the money. You know why he owes the money? Is because this Gadol is making a claim against him. He says, you owe my father money. That's what's generating the Shvua. So why are you calling it Tanat Atzmo, not Tanat Acherim? Gemara says, no, you know why it's called Tanat Atzmo? Because it's Tanat Acherim v'dat Atzmo. It's a claim by a third party, by the other party, by the son, and a hoda'ah by this individual. This individual is making the admission. So the person, the borrower, is making the admission, and the claim is coming from another party. Gemara says, it's like, oh, what a joke. They say, kulhu. Every case, nami tanat achirim v'dat atzmo, ninhu. That's every case in modu b'miksat. What's the case in modu b'miksat? The case in modu b'miksat is a party comes along, is a claimant, he makes a claim against you, and the defendant admits to a portion of it. So what's different between this case and any other case? You have here a identical case to every case in modu b'miksat. So how can you make claim this is tanat atzmo? That's every case, and that every case in modu b'miksat is a taina by a third party, by a claimant, and then the defendant, comes along and says, no. I repaid half of it. That's exactly what the case is. Somewhere it says, Elo bit de Rabo mekamiflige. They're arguing in the position of Rabo. Position of Rabo is the expression or the reason why a person has to take a shavua when it comes to modu miksat. And what's that? Damar Rabo, mipnei ma amra Torah modu miksat atana yishava. Why do you have to take a shavua when you're modu miksat? Chazaka, ein adam meiz panav mipnei bal chovo. A person will not deny a statement made by his Baal Chov. A person will not look the Baal Chov in the face and deny the fact that he did him a tova. That's Rashi. Rashi claims the reason he will not deny it over here is because he did him a tova. What was the tova? He lent him money. He did him a favor. Since he did him a favor, he is embarrassed to deny the fact that he owes money in front of him because of this favor. Now, because of that, Rashi says that only applies to a loan. When it comes to a pikadon, where you're the one who has the pikadon is doing the favor, meiz u meiz, he would be meiz panav. Tosafot, on the other hand, says no. It's anything, a person, what does it mean that a person's e meiz panav b'fnei bal chovo means a person will not deny face-to-face a transaction where he knows the other person knows the truth. He will not look someone in the eye when he knows they know the truth and lie to their face. So that means, so Tosafot says it applies both to malven, loven, and to pikadon. Because when it comes to pikadon, he can't look the owner in the face and say, I never took this from you, or I returned it to you, because he's too scared, he's too afraid to do it, or he doesn't feel right. He has a guilty conscience about it. So therefore, he'll never deny it. Either way, this idea is that the person is unwilling to make a complete denial in this case, because he's embarrassed. So v'ha b'kulei b'olei chafrei. The kafrei. Over here, he really should deny the whole loan. Why is he not denying the whole thing? Because he's too embarrassed to do it, to do such a thing. He will not be so brazen as to go in front of him, either because of Rashi, because he did him a tova, according to Tosfot, because he won't lie to someone's face. Or on the other hand, he should admit it to the whole thing, because he owes the money. So why is he admitting to the whole thing? He's trying to wiggle out, right? Until I get the money back to repay him. He doesn't have enough money to repay the loan right now. So he has two choices. He can either deny the whole loan, or he can admit to the whole loan. Denying the loan, he can't do. It's not an option for him. Why is it not an option for him? Because that is not an acceptable claim for an individual. Either because this guy did a tovah from him, so it's kafui tov and he won't do it. Or going to Tosfot, nobody will look someone in the eye when they know the truth and lie to them. So therefore, he will not make that claim. Now, he should admit to the whole amount. Why does he not take that option? Because he doesn't have the money to pay. So what does he do? He's modav miksat. That's a way for him to kind of play both sides. So what do we say to him? Take a shvuah. So that's it. Keched loli lebi kule. So Amar, so Arachman Amar, the Torah says, Rami shvuale aluye. Tell him to take a shvuah. Kedei keched loli lebi kule. So that he'll admit to the truth over here. So that's Rabba's position about why modi miksat matters. So let's think about this. The time or the key element of this idea of Rabba is that you've lost amigo. If you were willing to make a denial, a full-fledged denial, kofer bakol, then you would have amigo. When you're modav miktzat, you admit to a portion of it, you could have denied the whole thing. Lo ayu dvarim me'olam. That's exactly the case of Meshiv Avedah. He could have denied the entire transaction. Instead, what does he do? He gives it again to half of it. So over there we say migo, that he could have denied the whole thing, and he admits it to a portion of it. He's like a Meshiv Avedah. If he's a Meshiv Avedah, we're not going to make him take a shvua. On the other hand, in our case over here, he's not like that because he's taken away the option of kofer bakol. There's no longer amigo. But what happens if we are able to reintroduce that option? If we're able to reintroduce that option, according to Rashi, that's a case of pikadon, where he is meiz panav. Or we're going to show a case now, maybe betanat aviv. When he's coming with a claim from his father, maybe we lose that meiz panav. He's not worried about lying. He won't lie to the father, but he would lie to the son. And that's what the Gemara says. This is the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov savar lo shna bo velo shna bivno eino meis. Elazar ben Yaakov says doesn't matter to him, doesn't matter if his son, he would not deny it. If it's according to Rashi, if the father did him a tova, he would be afraid to repay that tova with bad, whether it's to the father or to the son. According to Tosafot, he would not lie to, just like he wouldn't lie to the father, he doesn't lie to the person who's standing in the shoes of the father. Here it's a little harder to explain, but we'll assume that he knows that he thinks the son knows or the father told him about it, so he's not willing to lie to one of the parties over here. On the other hand, Rabbanan Sabre b'fanav hu de'enu meiz. This idea of enu meiz panav b'fnei b'chovo only applies to directly to the creditor, to the lender of the money. Avav b'fnei b'no meiz. But it comes to his son, whose son was not aware of the transaction, wasn't a party to the transaction. There he's willing to deny it, and he's willing to be meiz panav. Wait, if he's willing to be meiz panav, then what do we have here? We have a case where he has an option to be kofer bakol. If he does not take up the option for kofer bakol, his modu miksat, he has amigo, he had a better claim, and therefore he's going to be patur from yeshua over here, and that's midlo meiz, meshiva vedahu. The fact that he did not deny the whole thing, and was modu miksat, he's like a meshiva vedah. So if he's a meshiva vedah, he doesn't have to take a shvua. So that's what the Gemara now explains. The machlokes between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim revolves around the fact of whether meiz panav applies to a child or does not apply to a child. Now, what about the fact that he's a katan over here? Rashi claims in the Maskono, right, the Gemara went through a series of attempts to explain this Mishnah. The Gemara said at first it was a katan. We said, well, it doesn't matter. If it's a katan, it doesn't work. Then we said it's tanat atzmo. Then we said it was tanat gadol. Right, that's the Gemara's moving through. Then the Gemara came to this solution, b'derabo kamiflege. Now, when the Gemara says b'derabo kamiflege, Rashi suggests over here that they went back to assuming that we're talking about a katan over here. We're talking about a claim of a katan. So why is there shavua over here? So what's the chisaron? What was the chisaron in the fact that a katan? What's the chisaron in the claim of a katan? Is the chisaron for not taking shavua is because there's no transaction? Or is the chisaron that there's no ta'ana? It says a katan doesn't have a ta'ana, we have no ta'ana over here. Rashi claims that the chisaron by a katan is the netina or the transaction. Therefore, what does Rashi say over here? It's the last, if you look up top, it's the last wide line of Rashi. It says, Miu, hacha ta'anahi. Here, for a katan, it's a ta'ana, taha ika netinat ish. because his father is the one who generated the transaction. His claim is coming from the netina of his father. So what generates the shvuah? Generates the shvuah is the transaction, and his tana, this katan, can come here with a claim based on the netina of his father and generate the shvuah. There are other Rishonim who believe that the chisaron is the ta'ana. The lack of ta'ana by the katan means there is no shvuah. How do we solve that problem? That's what the Gemara moved through to get to a gadol. We're talking about a case of a gadol over here. So why, when we're talking about a case of a gadol, should it be meshiva veda? What's the question? He's a full-fledged ta'ana. The answer that when you have a gadol over here is that he's a son. If he's a son, you've opened up the option of kofar bakol, according to the Chachamim, at least, when you open it up. So those Rishonim believe that the failure or the inability to take a shvuah is because of a tana. They believe that the conclusion of the Gemara is that we're talking about a gadol. Talking about a gadol who's coming, he's called a katan because he's speaking about milei daviv, and the problem revolves around this idea of whether he's meiz panav bifnei, right? But no, we're not meiz panav bifnei gadol. According to Rashi, the chisaron in the shvuah is the lack of netinat ish. And the lack of netinat ish can be overcome by aviv, that his father did the transaction. And therefore, since his father did the transaction, that overcame the problem of shvuah. And we're talking about here is a full-fledged katan who's making a claim based on the netina of his father. Okay, now, the Gemara continues and says, "Mi matzit mukmak la k'Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov." Rav, you're suggesting that the end of our Mishnah, or our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. How could that be? Haktani reisha. Let's look at the beginning of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says early on, "Maneli abba biyadcha." He says, "You have 100 zuz of my father's, and the chabiyadi alechamishim dinar." Says you only have 50 of them. So he says, "Patur." Mipnei k'meshiva veidahu, he's patur because he's like returning a veidah. So this is a statement that's exactly the opposite of the position of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. So you want to claim Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is the author of the Mishnah? We have a statement earlier on the Mishnah that sounds exactly like the position of the Chachamim and not Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, where it says, no, even Rav Elazar ben Yaakov agrees in some instances that it's meshiva veidah. And what's that depend on? Hotam d'lo amar barili, hachadam amar barili. It has to do with the nature of the claim that is being made here. If the claim is a bari, it's an absolute claim where he comes and says, you owe my father money. Where he makes an absolute and clear claim, where he is certain that the money is owed, over there, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov believes you have to take a shvuah. Because you have a case of modem miksat, you have according to Rashi, you have netinat aviv, which generates the shvuah. According to other Rishonim, it's the fact that he's a gadol now. He's making a claim on behalf of his father. Since he's a bari, you have a tana, you have a full-fledged tana, and he's going to have to take a shvuah when he's modem b'miksat over here. So that's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So he's any meiz panav. He's not willing to be meiz panav. So the kofar bakol option's not there, and he's going to have to take a shvuah because he has no other option except to be modem miksat. When he's modem miksat, he's going to have to take a shvuah. But on the other hand, if the katan, or according to the other Rishonim, the gadol comes with a shema claim, he says, I think you owe my father money, or I think there's money outstanding with this individual. So in that instance, we're depending solely on the statement of the borrower, because the son of the lender does not know for certain that the money's owed. So now, when money's returned or money is spoken about here, the only way or the only evidence or the only thing being brought to the case is the admission of the borrower. That is k'meshiva veida, and even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov will agree in that case, that's meshiva veida. So the case in the ratio of the Mishnah where it says patur, that's a case where he used shema. He says, I think you owe my father money. And in that case, when he comes back and he says to him, the borrower agrees, or he says, I owe you a portion, that's a meshiva veida, because there's no definitive claim. Whereas in our case, the verse that we brought before, the latter half of the Mishnah, where it says that nishbayin the katan is where the katan is making a bari claim. He's making a definitive claim that there is money owed to his father over here. And in that case, either because there was a netina of the father according to Rashi or according to others, you're talking about a gadol who has a full-fledged tana, that bari, that absolute, that certain claim makes him obligated to take a shvuah like he's a regular modem miksat. Why? Because the option of being kofar bakol is not open to him because he's enu meiz panav bifnei bal chovo u beno. So that's why Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds over here, and that's the way the Gemara explains it. Oh, that was the explanation of Rav for this part of the Mishnah. Shmuel has an alternative explanation. Shmuel amar lekatan. What does it mean that you take a shvuah to a katan? That's the paramich nesei katan. That's not you're taking a shvuah to the claim of a katan. That's if you're taking money away from the katan. You want to collect. You have an outstanding loan, and you're coming to collect from a katan. His father passed away. He owed you money, and you want to collect from his nechasim. Ule hekdesh. And what does it mean from hekdesh? Li paramich nechasei hekdesh. You want to claim and take money from hekdesh. You got to take a shvuah. Gemara says, "Lekatan liparai minichse tanina." That we have a Mishnah about. Minichse yitomim lo yiparai elo bishvua. When it comes to the nichsim of yitomim, right, the orphans that are left over the property of their father, you may not. If you're a bal chov, you're a lender, right, over here. You may not come and collect your loan unless you take a shvua. That's the takana chamim that you have to be nishba v'notel. The only way you can take money out of the yitomim, take a shvua. So now the Gemara says, "Tarte lamali." Right, so Gemara says, "What do I need two times? Why do I need the Mishnah, right, that tells me nichsei yotim liparai lebishvua, and our Mishnah, which is saying nishbaim lekatan?" So I'm telling you twice that you have to take a shvua to take a collection from a katan. So Gemara says, "Hakamash blan kederbayi kashisha." That comes to conclude or teach us about the case of bayi kashisha. The tani of bayi kashisha yotomim shamru. When the yotomim we're talking about gedolim. We're talking about gedolim here. Bein tzelech lamar katanim. That also applies to gedolim. Ben leshvua, ben leziborit. When I say you have to come and take a shvua to collect money from them, I'm not talking about yitomim katanim. I'm talking about even yitomim gedolim. If you have someone who's over age of bar mitzvah, and therefore he's able to transact, he's able to be in a court case, even in that case, if you want to collect from his property, you've got to take a shvua. That's the takana. The takana is, when it comes to someone collecting based on the claim against the father, if you're going to collect from the children, you've got to come with a claim and a shvua. So that's why it's mentioned twice. Mentioned once to teach you the din of ketanim, and once to teach you the din of gedolim. Whether it's ketanim or whether it's gedolim over here, you must take a shvua to collect from their property. And that's also the last line has to do, it's not really relevant to Gemara, it's ben leziborit. That if you collect from the nichsei yutomim, you only get from their ziborit. You only collect out of the worst of their property, the lowest right level or quality of property that you can take from it. Lehekdesh, lipara min nichsei hekdesh. It says that you will take a shvua to hekdesh, that's if you're going to take money away from hekdesh. Tanina, we have a Mishnah that tells us that, what? Min nichasim mishubadim lo yifru'u alim bishvua. When it comes to encumbered property, this is right, we've seen this Mishnah, but this is talking about hejot, not talking about hekdesh, it's talking about regular lay people. If a person owes money, there's a borrower here, a debtor, that owes money, and then he sold all of his property away. Along comes the lender, and he says, "I want my money back." He says, "I have nothing left." He goes, "Well, I'm going to collect it out of the land, the property here." Well, there were buyers of the land subsequent to the loan. So now he's going to go grab that property and take it away from some of these buyers. Well, if he wants to do that, if he wants to take away encumbered property, he's got to loyfru el b'shvua. He's got to take a shvua. That's talking about lay people. And now the Gemara says, "Mali mishubadim lehejot, mali mishubadim legvah." Why should it matter that they were sold to other people, therefore they're encumbered to other people, and now you want to collect the loan out of it, or whether you encumbered it to hekdesh? You gave it to hekdesh, and now you're trying to. The person here is saying, "I borrowed money, or I lent him money before I made it was makdish everything," and that's the case. He's coming with a claim, right? And he's saying, "I want my money, but Hekdesh already has it all in their possession, so I'm going to take it away from something that Hekdesh has." So what should be the difference between a hedge owner and Hekdesh? He should have to take a shvuah to remove encumbered property. Where it says, "Itzrich, I still need this over here." Sakadat chamina hedjotu da damosek nunya. Right? That a person, why do I need that case over there? Because by hedjot, who da adamos, I told you, who adamosek nunya hedjot. A person will collaborate, right, or will collude to trick or to get money out of a regular layperson. So this borrower over here is making it up. He's fibbing. He's lying. He made up the whole case, and he's just saying that you owe me money. I owe money to this individual. Then the Baal Chov comes, the person who's supposedly the grantor of the money, right? The person who lent the money over here. This lender comes along, and the creditor says, "Listen, he owes me money. He admits to the fact. I'm going to collect the property." Now, the Loveh is lying. He never really borrowed the money. So what is he doing here? They're going to split the property. The Loveh makes up the whole case. In order to have to split, they get to split the Loveh and the Malveh. The supposed Loveh and Malveh will split the property over here. So for that reason, they would do this against the layperson. Aval Hekdesh. When it comes to Hekdesh, en adam osik nunya al Hekdesh. People don't play tricks on Hekdesh like this. People don't collaborate, collude to trick Hekdesh to get money out of Hekdesh, to get their land back from Hekdesh and split it. People are afraid of Hekdesh. They're afraid of stealing from people, but they are afraid of stealing from Hekdesh. So Kamash Malon, that even though we don't say that, generally they're not making Knuya, we still make you take a Shavuah when you want to take away encumbered property. When it's given to Hekdesh, we still worry about the fact that person will maybe not treat Hekdesh with the proper conduct or proper way that get deference that he should give to it, and therefore he has to take a shvuah when he's collecting for shvuadim of hekdesh. Where it says, wait a minute, Rama Rav Huna, when it says shchimira shikdish kol nechasav, shchimira that says he's makdish all of his possessions, but my manela ptoni biadi. And he says, but out of this stuff that I'm makdish, that 100 over there that belongs to so and so, he lent me money before, and I owe him that money. That's his money. Neman, He's believed. Chazaka ein adam osek knunyal hekdesh. There's a chazaka that a person does not collude or collaborate to trick hekdesh. The conclusion of our previous gemara was that the person does. He has to take a shvua on the meshubadim because we're afraid of him playing games with hekdesh. Over here, Rav Huna makes a definitive statement. People don't play tricks on hekdesh. They don't try to extract property from hekdesh. Says, wait a minute, you're talking about two different cases. Imre, when do we say this? Right, that's the case, Hani Mile Shchiv Meira. That's when we're talking about a Shchiv Meira. Dein Adam Chote V'lo Lo. When you're talking about Shchiv Meira, that's someone who's on his deathbed. If he steals from Hekdesh, who's going to get the benefit of him stealing from Hekdesh? That's going to be his Yorshim. Right, those that inherit him are the ones that are going to get the benefit. He personally is going to get no benefit over here. Aval gabe bari v'day chashinan. When a person's a healthy person and he's the one who's going to get the benefit from it, then he would. People will sin. People will trick Hekdesh in order to get money that they will benefit from. They will not trick Hekdesh on their deathbed when it's going to benefit someone else because they get no hana out of it. And I would think also that a person on their deathbed, I mean, just in the psychology of this, a person on their deathbed is thinking, you know, this is the end and that there's no more time to do tshuva. There's no more time to anything. You know, this is it. So he wouldn't do such a thing on his deathbed. So a person in the position of Shechiv Meira will not play tricks on Hekdesh. We don't assume he plays tricks on Hekdesh. A Bari, we don't trust him anymore. And we say he would play tricks on Hekdesh. He'll play tricks on Hekdesh. Then we will worry about him and he'll have to take a shavua when it comes to Mishubadim. So here we had this last piece of the Mishnah. The Gemara says, you do not make a shvua on a tanat katan because the pasuk says ki ten ish el re'eyu v'nikrav balabait elukim, that you need a tina, a full-fledged netina to generate a shvua. The next line in the Mishnah, which was problematic, which is that nishbaim lekatan lehekdesh. You do take a shvua to katan. Rav's solution to that problem is katan baba betanat aviv. It's a katan who comes by the claim of his father. So according to Rashi, that solved the problem of netina. According to others, it solved the problem that he's a gadol. Either way, he's coming betanat aviv, and we had the machlokes Rabbi Elazar and the chachamim. Shmuel says the solution to the problem is not that you were taking a shvua to the katan because you owe him money. No, it's the other way around. You're a claimant here, and the katan's the defendant. You take a shvua when you want to claim from mishubadim of a katan. Right now, the Mishnah. The Gemara says, Elu dvarim shenishbaim aleihem. These are the items that you do not take a shvua on. Havadim, hashtarot, v'akarkaot, v'hakdeshot. These four items a person does not take a shvua on, they are precluded or excluded from the parsha of shvua. Ein bahem tashlume kefil. These same four items, you do not pay kefil for them. If a person's a ganav and is going to nave these items, he does not pay kefil. Even though we say karka enin igzelet, karka is not stolen, that's gzela. When it comes to gneva, it can be stolen. And what's that? Mesigvul reu. If you move the borderline of your property over, you're a ganav. You can't be gozel, but you can be gonev. Velo tashlume arba'a v'chamisha. You do not pay 4 and 5 times. By the way, this is only relevant to hekdesh, because 4 and 5 times is only paid for tvichan mechira, which is only relevant by a shor and a seh. So shor and seh are only relevant by hekdesh, and obviously not relevant by avadim, karkaot, and shtarot. Right? Shomer chinam enu nishba. Shomer chinam does not take a shvua. No se sachar enu mishalem. No se sachar does not pay. Tosfos over here says, why did they pick Shomer Chinam Enu Nishba and Nosa Zechar Enu Meshalem? He says, because the default case by Shomer Chinam is Gneva V'Avida, and over there the Shomer Chinam takes a Shvua to be Patur. So the default case is a Gneva and Avida. In a case of Gneva and Avida, what does the Shomer Zechar do? He pays. So that's why it says Enu Meshalem. But Tosfos claims over here that Shomer Chinam and Shomer Zechar are completely Mufka from the Parsha. They don't take Shvua, they don't pay, and Tosfos goes even a step further to say, even if they're Posheya, even if they're pushim over here, they do not pay whatsoever because they are mufka from the parsha of totally. Shomer chinam, shomer sechar, none of this applies. Nothing applies. When it comes to abedim, shtarot, and karkaot, and hekdeshot, none of this applies, and they are totally patur, even if they're poshea. Tosfos goes as far as to say over here, imshal bayit, if a person borrows a house from a friend, vinisraf, and it was burnt down, patur. Because none of these items are included. Bayit is mechuber the karka, is a din of karka, and therefore it's precluded from the parsha. He won't have to pay. Even if he's a posheya, he will not have to pay. Now, be sure that there are rishonim that disagree. They disagree with Tosfos both by sha'al, barring a bayit, whether you have to repay, as well as Tosfos' conclusion that even by posheya, they don't have to pay. Right? You could argue that they're mufka from the parsha of shvua and shilum when it comes to geneva, the basics, like geneva of avida, or the case of ones, or a case of meta machmat machlemlacha, which are normal cases. But case of posheya, maybe you would be included and you would have to repay. I'm just bringing you Tosfos who says you don't have to repay in this case, but there are others who disagree with that position of Tosfos. Now, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kodshim shechaya b'achriyotam. When it comes to kodshim, where you're responsible to raise place the item, like a neder, person says hari alai chova aula, that he's going to bring an ola, and he designates an animal for it. If that animal is taken away, lost, killed, anything happens to it, he's got to replace the animal. So that's kodshim shechaya b'achriyotam nishbayin aleim. Then you take a shvua. This is Rabbi Shimon l'shitato. Then when it comes to like things like kodshim kalim or things that where you're chaya b'achriyotam, that they are considered mamon balim. They're like you're mamon because it's davar agurim namamon. It's mamon dami. B'sheinu chaya b'achriyotam. On the other hand, if you're not responsible for them, like a nidava, then you don't take a shva because it's not like you're a mamon. Rabbi Meir Omer, yesh devarim shein kekarka, bekarka ve'enem kekarka. There's certain items that are attached to the ground, but are not like the ground, and we'll see in tomorrow's daf what that is. Ve'en chachamim modim lo, chachamim don't agree. Ketzad, what's the case? Eser gav ganim tu'unot. You have vines full of grapes. Masarti lecha, I gave you 10 vines of grapes that are full. He says, v'halo merinam elechamesh, you only gave me 5. Rabbi Meir Mechayev Shva, he says that's a modu mixas and you're chayav, even though they're attached to the ground and mechuber the karga, and we'll tell you tomorrow what it is because they're fully ripe. And the machlok is kolomedi batzer yim ki batzer damir or not. That we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow. Chamimim kol mechuber the karga hu karka. The grapes are still attached to the ground. We're talking about karka. There's no shva by karka. Einish b'ayim al adavar should be midah b'shkal minyan. Has to be something that's defined. Modu b'mixat is there's a defined claim and there's a defined response. Ketzad. Bait malei masarti lecha. Says I gave you a full house. V'kis malei masarti lecha, or I gave you a full pocket's worth, or a full wallet's worth. Halo omer, eni yodea. Elamash hanachta, ata notel. Whatever you put here, I'm giving back to you. Patur. Over there, you're patur. Because there was no defined, again, the claim is not defined, how much. And the denial, he just said, I'm handing back, here's the house, here's the arnaki, I don't know. So again, there's no defined, there's no modu miksat, because there's no definition of what was and what wasn't. Zeomer, on the other hand, adaziz, if one says that I gave you a house full until the rafters, until the boards up in the aliyah, zeomer adachalon, the other one says, no, only up to the window, chayav, that's modu miksas, because there they defined the extent of how much the house was full. And the other one whose denial is, it was only up to this point. So that is a case of modu miksas and be chayav. Tashlume kefel minolan. How do we know that by a case of tashlume kefel, that a... there is no relevance over here, there's no shvua, or there's no payment when it comes to these items, these four items, Tan Rabbanan, because the Pasuk says, Al kol davar pesha, klal. Al shor v'achamor v'aseh, v'al salma, prat. V'al kol aveda, chazaru klal. Klal u prat u klal. Yatan, elekid eina prat. You have a klal prat alat, we only deal with the prat. Ma prat mefurash davar hametaltel v'gufo mamon. What's the common denominator between all these items that are mentioned over here, all the numerated items or the specified items, is that they are movable items, they're not real property, v'gufo mamon, and they are inherently have value. They have inherent value to them. Avko davar hametaltel v'gufo mamon. So therefore, we only include things that are movable, and they have inherent value. Yatzu kakaot, land is not a movable item, that's real property. Shein metaltalin. Yatzu avadim. Avadim are excluded shehukshu the karka, because they are compared to karka. We know that by an Eved Knani, he's compared to karka. They are passed down Yerushav. It says, v'nachaltem otam livnechem achareichem. So since they have a din like karka, therefore you also, they're not subject to the policy of kefel. Yatzu shtarot, shafopi shein metaltalin in gufan mamon. So when it comes to shtarot, they're excluded because they have no inherent value. The shtar is only valuable because of what's written in it, but it itself has no inherent value. Hegdesh, why is Hegdesh excluding? Because it says Re'ehu in the Parsha, which means his friend. His friend means the other party in the case is Re'ehu. But when we're talking about Hegdesh being the other party, then he's not involved, or the Hegdesh doesn't get involved in these types of cases. So that's why over here, Teshulme Kefil doesn't work. Now, Lo Arba V'chamisha, also do not pay 4 or 5 times. My time. So this is the basic belief of the Gemara, is that when it comes to paying 4 or 5 times, 4 or 5 times is actually made up of 2 components, that you stole it, and then you either sold it or you were toveach it. So when you sold it, you're now chayav 4 or 5 times. If you were just a ganav, then you would pay kefel. So then when we say he pays 4 or 5 times, that's really comprised of kefel plus an additional 3 and 4 times. So those additional 3 and 4 added on to get you to the point of 4 and 5 times. So it's the kefel plus. So that's how you get to the 4 or 5 times. So the Gemara says, well, if you're mufka from the parsha of kefel, we just saw these 4 items are all excluded from kefel, the parsha of kefel, then they're automatically going to be excluded from the parsha of 4 and 5 times. Why? My tama tashlumei arba v'chamisha amar rachmana v'lo tashlumei shlosh v'arba. If you don't pay kefel, then you'd be missing one of those levels, and you'd only pay 3 or 4 times. As you said before, that tvicha mechira of the 4 or 5 times builds on the kefel. Well, if the kefel's missing, then he's not going to be paying 4 or 5 times. He's only paying 3 or 4 times. The Torah specs about a case of 4 or 5, and not 3 and 4, and therefore tashlumei arba v'chamisha does not apply. Shomer chinam menu nishba. Parshat Shchor Mechinam is excluded. He doesn't take a shvua here. According to Tosos, he's totally moved from the Parshat Shchor Mechinam. Ki ten ish al reo, because it says, Ki ten ish reo klal. Kesef o kelim, prat. Those are the specific items. Lishmor, right, to watch. Chazar v'klal. Klal uprat uchlal. Again, you have a klal uprat uchlal. Now, truthfully, the Gemara in Baba Kama discusses this. In the end, the Gemara concludes that we learn it with the riboy meal to riboy. So Tosos over here says the Gemara in the end is using klal uprat uchlal loosely. This idea of that you have a riboy meal to riboy or klal uprat uchlal, it's just giving you the broad statement of the definition. And in the end, what's excluded from the riboy meal to riboy is the same things that are excluded from the klal uprat uchlal. So the Gemara just uses the klal uprat uchlal, even though we're really using riboy meal to riboy. So when it says klal uprat uchlal yadan elokai prat, you only go based on what the common denominator is between the specific items. Ma prat mifurash davar mitaltel v'gufo mamon. Just like these specific items are items that are movable and they have inherent value, av kol davar mitaltel v'gufo mamon. So too, any item that is movable and has inherent value, yatzu karkot chain mitaltelin. Karkot are left out because they're not movable items. Yatzu avadim avdim excluded shukshu the karkot because they're compared to karka, or they're considered like karka. Yatzu shtarot shtarik sun shavu pish mitaltelin. You know, they're movable items and gufan mamon. They have no inherent value. Hekdesh re'eu k'tiv. Again, the word re'eu is used over here, and so their hekdesh is precluded from this case. No se sachar. How do we know that shomer sachar is excluded? Inu mishalem min alon detanu rabbanan, because it says over there ki teni shel re'eu klal. This is the second parsha in Mishpatim. First parsha is talking about shomer chinam. The second parsha is talking about shomer sachar. Over here it says ki teni shel re'eu klal. Chamor o shor o se prat v'chol beima any animal lishmor chol beima lishmor chazar uklal klal upratu klal. So now you have again a klal upratu klal, and then the gemara says dot etc. ad hekdesh re'eu k'tiv. So we have the same drush over there. What's the common denominator between them? Is that they are mitaltel and gufo mamon. If we exclude karka, which is not mitaltel, we exclude abadim that are kshu the karka out, and we exclude shtar, which is not gufo mamon. And hekdesh is excluded because over the parsha it says ki teni shel reu. Talk about a case of reu. Reu is not hekdesh. Hekdesh is not your friend. It says it's not your friend. They are precluded from the parsha. So far what we've done in the Mishnah has shown that these items do not require shvua, and that these parshiot are not relevant to these four items, and that is the four items that we mentioned are karkaot, right, hegdesh, and avadim and shtarot. They have no application, and the dinim of shomer chinam, shomer sachar, and shvua do not apply to these items. They are precluded from the parashah. That's what the Gemara just learned. Where do we know that from? And the Gemara brought down these klal uprat uchlal to teach us these items. Okay, we'll stop over here, and we'll continue with the explanation of the Mishnah tomorrow.